Hey everyone, it's Editing Greg here. Unfortunately, we had a little bit of an audio issue again. For some reason, neither of us can understand how or why this happened, but Dylan's mic somehow recorded my voice as it, like, the track that played in his headphones. Thankfully, I was really able to edit around it. It was a pretty easy fix, but just wanted to let you know that there are some rough audio bits where I have a bit of an echo. I couldn't get them all. But please enjoy our slashings, and happy Friday the 13th to you from your old pals here at Movies for When.
I guess the real issue here is I have headphones on for the first time and my hair looks awful underneath over the head headphones.
What are you talking about? You're rocking it. You're rocking it.
That's
dude.
All right. It's not a purple beard, but I do have some up top hair.
Yeah, dude. I miss up top hair. I'd trade the whole purple beard for it, to be honest with you.
Well, allegedly everybody is going to Turkey to get implants. So, you know, you got that option available.
I never thought I wanted to do the plugs until I saw Nicolas Cage do them.
Well,
and you know, if they're good enough for him, they're good enough for me.
Having just read a Nick Cage book from his humble beginnings, he has had more affirming surgeries than one might think, but it's worked out well for him.
I can see the kind of had work done face, you know, and I would say he has, like, a somewhat good work done face, because it's like they still let him look like he's aged, you know, like he's not trying to look 20. And even I appreciated in his plugs that they didn't really mess with the hairline, just the thickness, because it was like no one's gonna believe it grew back, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. I call that the Steve Carell effect, because he definitely did not have hair in the first season of The Office, and we got that back.
I think one of the saddest things about The Office is, as a function of time, how much less okay it became to be ugly on that show.
100%. 100%.
Because that's what was so cool about it, is it had, like, and again, I don't even think the people on The Office are ugly. I think when you have been watching TV people your entire life, I think normal people are kind of jarring by comparison. And yeah. I just think they're normal human beings.
I think that's a trend in media. You know, they're putting out this new Harry Potter show, and one of the hot soccer players from Ted Lasso is going to be Hagrid. It's like, really? We don't have any big burly character actors that we could be bringing into this? Anyway,
Hagrid was literally my only cosplay option at Harry Potter parties. Okay, like,
what?
you're doing me dirty if they're just giving it out to any skinny cutie guy, you know?
Well, luckily with your bald hair, I do think there's still opportunities for Friday the 13th fan films for you. So there's a transition.
I was in one time. It was called, if you ever want to look it up, this dude Jeff Colangelo he's a really awesome fight choreographer, and his movie is called Jason versus Jason versus Jason into the Jasonverse. And I got to be one of the Jasons. It was really awesome.
Well, and this can be a good segue into the intro for the episode, because it is,
sure,
you know, Friday the 13th, and
sure,
I've been on a handful of these episodes of Movies for When. But yeah, we're going a little bit of a different route with the Friday the 13th coverage this year, and I think your forays into not just fan films, but amateur filmmaking is going to be consequential for this discussion.
Yeah, dude. This is going to be fun, because we're off the beaten path on this hike, if you will.
We are, and luckily we're not alone.
No, never. I mean, and frankly, you could have stopped at Never Hike for this endorsement, okay?
Exactly.
Like, with or without friends, I could go in the fucking woods, okay?
Well, I think Greg might still be hiking in the woods. I have yet to have heard him on a podcast yet, so I'm a little behind on episodes though. So until Greg is rescued from the Camp Crystal Lake grounds to another Friday the 13th episode, I will stand in.
Well, I think that Greg mistakenly went to Camp Crystal Lake because he believed, based on the attire, there was a game to officiate. And he thought he had a hockey game to, and it's a whole thing. The miscommunication, it's actually a murderer that wears a hockey mask, but he is texting me. He's working on the situation, and he's optimistic that it may be resolved.
Well, and I think that's another good kind of tease at this coverage today. The PR for Camp Crystal Lake is just outstanding in the year 2017.
Isn't it? I mean, dude, this... I don't know where to begin. Should we begin?
So here, go ahead and give like an actual intro into what we're sure. talking about, you know.
Hello, movies for when listeners.
Yes, thanks for joining.
This is Denny and Dylan.
Hour of the podcast. You won't hear the first.
We are here to talk about, instead of doing a Friday the 13th movie, as is tradition, we're actually running low on Friday the 13th movies, and Dylan suggested that we shake it up and go for what is a, I mean, like, it's weird to call it a fan film because it's like a production, but like, long story short, the reason it is able to use all this IP and stuff is because they basically were super good about not profiting from this. And they, like, I think, like, the DVDs were sold at a very limited release to recoup the cost of filmmaking, and then it was posted for free on YouTube after that. So that's why they were able to do this. It's Never Hike Alone. There's a whole series now that I'm kind of excited that we can kind of indoctrinate into this Friday the 13th tradition.
Absolutely.
Friday the 13th fan films are a whole thing. I think I talked on our last podcast that I one time went to a rundown of them at Alamo Drafthouse. And I just feel like, man, it's just Evil Dead and Friday the 13th are things that, like, you and your friends could very conceivably do in the woods. You know, like, they're just...
And I it'll be a talking point later, but I think this is what really sold me on that idea that... You know, for those not up to date with court proceedings regarding the copyrights to Friday the 13th, essentially nobody can really make a movie either about Jason or called Friday the 13th, or they can't seem to get together to do it. So at what point is it just better for Friday the 13th to enter the public domain? And the fan films are what they are. Because, I mean, I'm not sure anything produced now wouldn't essentially be a fan film anyways. I mean, they're talking about a prequel TV show. Like, of course that's just going to be fan fiction, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess to start off, like, I actually really enjoyed the fan Never Hike Alone. I am typically not a fan of fan films. I think for a couple different reasons, not the least of which is sometimes the production quality is really distracting. But which is, you know, if there was a bunch of CGI blood in this, I would probably feel differently about it. But I think
if you
want to do a Friday the 13th fan film, you got to essentially time travel back to the late 70s, early 80s and do it right. And I think they were able to kind of do that here with a modern lens, a literal GoPro lens.
No, and I think there's a million talking points. My question is, do we want to go right into it, or do we want to tempt fate with what we've been watching segment?
We should. We can keep it quick, because I actually haven't been watching a ton.
I've only got one since we last recorded. Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, well, you kick off.
So I watched, in addition to finally restarting BoJack Horseman, which I was started because this had such an animation style that reminded us of it, we watched Robot Dreams, and I gave it a 50. And I texted Greg, and I said, you've got to watch Robot Dreams. And he said, I told you that like a month ago.
okay, Greg, not all of us are, you know, stay-at-home dads now and have all this time to watch robot movies.
Well, he actually watched it on the plane from Finland, he told me. So, not all of us. Not all of us can just fly to Finland every time we want to catch up on our Netflix queue, Greg. No, but it is a 2D animated movie with no dialogue about a dog and a robot who are friends. And they get separated. And get ready to fucking cry, my friend.
Okay.
and it is, I mean, like, and it's a beautiful, beautiful story about relationships in general. I think, like, it definitely wants you to, like, on some level read their relationship as a friendship and on another level read it as a romance, I think.
Yeah.
And it just ends up being a movie that I think has some really profound truth about, like, human relationships in it.
That's really funny because a movie came out this year called The Wild Robot that is very similar.
Yes. Yes.
And I did see that. And when I watched the trailer for that, I thought there would be no dialogue. And then they were like, Pedro Pascal. And I'm like, oh, well, like, I guess there is going to be some dialogue in this.
Yeah.
So Robot Dreams would be what I thought The Wild Robot was going to be. And I did like The Wild Robot, but that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, we can put it in the now starting to get fleshed out robots with feelings genre with WALL-E and with Wild Robot. And what I told Greg is that Robot Dreams is like if the second half of WALL-E had as much balls as the first half of WALL-E.
Oh, I think that is accurate. Having not seen the movie, I know where you're going with that. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's high art. Also like stupid accessible. Like it's like an animal world where like the main character's name is Dog and his neighbors are named like Cat. And you know, like there's don't fucking think about it too much. They also live in like modern New York City. Wait. Not modern, because the World Trade Centers are featured prominently constantly in it. Last year, 2023, came out last year. So very intentional to include the World Trade Centers. I there is actual symbolism in that, I think.
Okay.
But I don't want to spoil the movie.
Huh. I'm going to get hung up on that then. That's what I'm going to keep
coming
back to.
And directed by Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Can you believe it?
50 out of 50, guys.
Yeah. that's my only thing I've watched since our last recording. What about you?
Well, so when we were talking before we actually started record, I was talking about how, you know, been trying to force myself into the Christmas spirit, and typically I'm pretty good about getting into, like, you know, fake, you know, holiday spirit and everything, mostly via like Jingle All the Way and stuff like that. But I have had a little bit harder of time, so we've been what I'm calling a very merry nihilistic Christmas, and we've just been watching a lot of very loosely connected Christmas movies that have maybe a bit darker of an edge to them. So, you know, some of them are like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Die Hard, and stuff like that. But I watched Emmett Otter's Jug Band, which is a Jim Henson like TV movie. And it's essentially like Muppets in the Great Depression. And I think it's supposed to be like heartwarming, but I found it extremely depressing. That's kind of what kickstarted all of this. But then I've also been not like purposely taking a break from media and movie watching, but I've just been trying to pull myself out of being online too much. So I've been reading a lot recently, and I've been rereading, I guess, Dracula, kind of in preparation of Nosferatu. So I got like 100 pages in that, and then I can already feel the Dracula wormhole rabbit hole that I'm pulling myself into, because I'm just gonna go
there's a lot
head first. I mean, yeah, like, and like the classics that I watch like every year for Halloween, like definitely, but like I'm really interested particularly in like the Nosferatu slant with the Robert Eggers' upcoming movie. So, yeah. So, more to come, I guess.
Man, I've been watching a lot of queer cinema lately and trying to just sort of familiarize myself with like the history and like.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you this. Lesbians have one and only one fucking metaphor, and it's vampires. Okay, like, every, if you need some, like, sapphic vampire films, like, I'm burnt out. I got some on the watch list I'm not going to make it to.
All right, well, of that, of what you did get to, what's the high water mark there?
Oh, easily Alucarda.
Okay,
that's not even fully vampiric. I highly recommend Alucarda. Okay. It's like a badass fucking movie about lesbians who worship the devil.
Okay, well, don't they all?
Right.
Well, awesome. Yeah, so I guess, look at us. That was like a really brief what we've been watching.
What is this?
I think
this is fucking
we're
bizarre.
But no, truly, I think a Friday the 13th in December kind of took us all for a twist this year. Especially we just had one in September, so it's kind of like, you know, Thanksgiving forced us to not be Halloween-y, and now we're jumping ourselves right back into it. So we've got to get the gears moving again.
Right, and you know, we'll just belly land into Terrifier 3, and that'll carry us through the season.
Exactly. I just very briefly, what are your opinions of the Terrifier movies?
So I've only watched the first one. Okay. And I just saw it this October. I thought it was there was a lot to love as like a slasher and as a gory movie. I mean, like, I didn't think it was like a good movie. I thought it had like a lot of really good effects.
Yeah.
I find myself very intrigued by this Art the Clown guy, especially after the finale of the movie. I find myself intrigued. You know, as far as like, you know, just fans of the horror genre, you can tell that, man, the gloves are off with this just like genre worship stuff. And I thought it was really fun. Two things, and the reason I am gonna watch the other one and see Terrifier 3, but like two things that have made me just not do it yet is like, I felt like it was a very mean-spirited movie.
100%, yeah.
And that's just like not my energy most evenings.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I get that.
Like
totally.
And so I've just kind of been avoiding that. And also, man, I actually don't feel any sort of way about clowns. Like, not positive, not negative. They actually like don't really interest me. They don't scare me. I'm not a fan of them. They're just like, I don't know. I don't give a shit about clowns.
Like, okay, well, we can just tell you're not a Francophile.
What's a Francophile?
Someone who likes French stuff. Not into mime culture, I can tell.
Oh, okay. Yes. I was like, I love Frankenstein. Thank you very much.
I am
a Francophile.
Into Frankenphile. I echo your sentiments there. I watched the first one and thought it was good. But whereas, like, I can watch, like, and almost feel fine putting on a Friday the 13th movie in the middle of the day, even though, like, I probably have an age-inappropriate kid running around, I watched Terrifier 1.
We turned out all right.
Like, I don't think I can really have this on unless it's, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and, like, everyone's, like, had melatonin and is completely knocked out, so.
I mean, like, that's, like, there's, like, if I, like, I grew up seeing Friday the 13th and no part of me thought that was, like, real, you know? But if I walked past some Terrifier stuff, I might have felt like I was looking at a snuff film at that age. I think that's probably wise.
And it's intentional, obviously. So, and truly, the thought of seeing it in a theater just seems so abstract to me because it does have almost, like, a too far of a step. But that being said, I've heard Terrifier 2 is, like, maybe balances the comedy aspect a lot better. I think the lead in Terrifier 2, and I think she comes back in 3, is maybe a bit more traditional of a, you know, final girl. So maybe there's a little bit more to root for there. So similarly, we'll come back. It does seem like watching during Christmas time is the ideal time to watch Terrifier 3. So, you know, maybe Christmas Eve after I'm done putting together presents, I'll just really ruin the vibe.
Hey man, I'll tell you, one of my favorite Christmas memories ever is getting drunk alone and watching Gremlins. So I support everyone doing whatever they need to do to get through
that,
the holiday
that is
season.
Also my favorite just normal Saturday night.
Why make it a special occasion? Why not live a little? Why not live a little?
You can get drunk and watch Gremlins alone any time of year.
You don't have to save it for the holidays, no, people. No. Indulge. We're in a dystopia. It doesn't matter. Man. Well, I actually, for once in my life, remembered to pull up a Critiker review of the week.
Okay, look
for
at you.
For Never Hike Alone. And also what I have not done once since Greg has been gone that I'm actually going to do now is tell the audience where they can watch this.
Oh.
You can watch it in its entirety for free on YouTube.
You can.
And it is completely legit. It is we already got into the whole, you know, the concept that people can own ideas and why that's offensive to monetary institutions.
I don't think we mentioned it. I think it was a Kickstarter as well. I don't know where the Kickstarter clause comes into producing money, if it just really means it has to go into the production and you cannot profit off of it. I don't totally know, mm-hmm. but no one made money on this, so it's okay to love.
Yeah.
Corporate overlords.
And, you know, user Ryray really captures a talking point I want to have on this, and their review is way better than any of the Friday the 13th films. whoever owns this franchise, when it's all said and done, you should fucking show up at the doors of Womp Stomp Studios, and you should first of all just give them a pile of money as a start, as a good faith payment. You better have an edible bouquet of some sort. And I want you to say, thank you for repairing the image of the IP I just fought so hard for. Will you teach me how to make a Friday the 13th movie? That is what they should be fucking doing, because this fucking movie is better than 80% of the Friday the 13th franchise.
And it's so funny because I think it obviously has a lot of adoration for the entirety of the franchise, but it's very much a back-to-basics movie, which everyone says they're going to do with a Friday the 13th movie, and then never does.
What basics?
Yeah.
When was this ever anywhere near basic and simple?
Well, and so I think that's where... how do you want to approach this? Do you want to give a synopsis? Do you want to just jump right in?
I'm going to give a whiplash warning if you're a Friday the 13th fan. If you're a Friday the 13th fan, I'm about to give a synopsis that spoils some really cool, you can only get it once type of reveals. Skip forward if you have not seen this. It is like 56 minutes. It's on YouTube. It is worth your time. Trust me.
Yeah.
Easy watch. And death. Okay. Synopsis of the movie is that former AEW champion Hangman Adam Page is on a hike by himself through the woods. He is vlogging on his GoPro, as people did in the 2010s, and when we were uncouth and unwashed.
Speaking to audiences that aren't there yet.
We would never do something like that, would we? Not us.
Can't live stream from the depths of Crystal Lake.
True. Long story short, or actually short story long, given how I'm recapping it, he runs afoul of Camp Crystal Lake and the actual fucking Jason Voorhees mask and everything. They have some cool fights as he tries to escape. There is a lot of very tastefully done and yet very simple practical effects that really went a long way in making the struggle believable. Then things get a little trippy as Hangman Page thinks he has escaped Jason, only to start having those darn classic Friday the 13th dream sequences, Dylan. They get us every time. They get us every time, and he does like three of them here.
I was going to say like eight, there are a handful of endings.
Yeah, but he wakes up in an ambulance, like I hope to one day from this nightmare. Everyone says, you were out for a long time. Nah, dude. He wakes up in an ambulance and they're trying to get him to the hospital, but he freaks out and starts hallucinating Jason. And wouldn't you know it, they sedate him from the freak out. An ambulance driver, Tommy Jarvis, played by, I don't even know his name, the guy who played Tommy Jarvis in Part 6.
Yes, Not do you know Corey his name? Feldman.
No. Easily, like... Honestly, probably the least notable Tommy Jarvis, but also he like gets like 10 points for doing this. And also he was the main guy in Return of the Living Dead for the eagle-eyed viewer.
Yep.
He's cool as shit. Anyway, it's like so fucking cool that they got like an original Tommy Jarvis actor to come back and do this shit. Like, it's so fucking cool. And long story short, Jason tries to attack the ambulance, but Tommy Jarvis is like, fuck you, and drives away. It's a really
psych ward escapee, Tommy Jarvis. Obviously got his shit straight, working as an EMT now.
We're so proud of him. Odd choice to stay near his his gravesite, but whatever.
And so I will give some spoilers for a portion of the sequels. It gets hairier. He shows up in a lot of these, he's main character status, and I guess somebody's got to take Jason out again.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so that's pretty much the synopsis.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get lost in the sauce. Do you have a relationship with this movie to give?
No, actually, this was my first time watching it. I'd heard about it for years. Again, I tend to not really like fan films. And this might be a somewhat okay portion to jump in there. I think my biggest issue with it is just from a creative standpoint, it just seems like so much effort into something that, you know, maybe you could be doing like an original story with, you know?
Sure, sure.
So, like, that was my opinion before going in to watch it, and I obviously walked away really enjoying it and, you know, kind of kicking myself for not watching it sooner. But I do wonder, from a creative standpoint, you know, we're seeing a lot of essentially Friday the 13th movies coming out. You know, I love The Final Girls, which is obviously inspired by that. There's that freaky Friday movie with Vince Vaughn that's very Jason-oriented. And then In a Violent Nature just came out last year.
Yes.
So there are people doing things with the Jason mythos of their own accord. Would that not be a better use of Kickstarter funds? I don't know. But again, I really fucking loved it. So if you have access to a Tommy Jarvis, please do this. But
yes,
otherwise,
absolutely.
You know, God, it just seems like a lot of work for something that you ultimately can't make money off of. And if the hope is to continue a story, cool. Or they're just better people than I am and don't need anything to come from this. So anyways, that was all my opinions before I went into it. But fucking loved it. I was surprised at how brisk it felt. When I saw it was like an hour, I was like, that's a long fan film. Like, you sure you don't want just like Jason to pop up and then like a Freddy Krueger glove to pop out of the snow at some point, you know? Like, I know where you're going
with
this,
simple,
guys. But no, I think, like I said, they went back to basics. They, I think, approached it from a modern standpoint, possibly better than, I mean, there aren't really modern Jason movies at this point. There was the remake that we went over last time I was on. Actually, it was two times ago that I was on, but last Friday the 13th episode we did. And, you know, that felt more of like an homage to the movies that came before it than this did. This felt fresh, while obviously in tune with what has come before.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. I mean, like, this is just like, you talk about a joyful movie. You know, like, people who took joy in what they were doing.
Exactly.
This is, like, it's hard to chalk it up to anything other than joy, because they, like, legally can't profit from it.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
yeah, if the end game here was to get hired by, you know, Paramount or whatever for a chance to do this for real, I'd say just take a few million dollars and put this back in theaters, you know? Like, this,
it's ready to go.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe
it's
if
ready.
You want to pad it a little bit more. I mean, because every knock I have against the movie is not against the movie. It's against my expectations of what a Friday the 13th movie is. Like, you kind of touched on it, but it's really only one character for 45 minutes of this 53-minute movie. And I would say, typically, a Friday the 13th movie lives or dies by its cast of killables and its insane kills. And you don't really have that here, I mean, just simply because of the format that they chose. It's obviously a financial benefiting decision to only have one cast member and, you know, kind of be able to have that first person perspective. But I think it's also kind of a, I mean, kind of a brave move for a Friday the 13th fan film to have, let's say, one super on-screen death and then maybe a couple, you know, off-screen, somebody shows up, bloody scenes. So, but it works really well. And I think that's, one, the passion that went into it, and two, the expertise. Like, you were mentioning that Friday the 13th fan film you were in with, like, fight choreography. I thought the stunts and action sequences in this were really well put together.
Oh, my God. Like, dude, like, this... this fight is seriously, like, as good as, if not better than, like, the Freddy versus Jason hand-to-hand combat stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah, very, this is a very smart movie. Like, very, very smart. Like, dude, I saw a bunch of dog shit Friday the 13th fan films by people who were passionate, okay?
Yeah.
You know, like, they were passionate about Friday the 13th, all right? It actually wasn't as fun as it sounded to watch that marathon at Alamo. Like, you know, this is like, it's not just someone who understands filmmaking, or it's not someone, it's not just people who understand filmmaking. It's people who understand Friday the 13th, and they understand what works about it, and they understand what needs to be there for it to feel like Friday the 13th, and they understand what you can cut. And
I think
like,
that's the important aspect.
Absolutely. And like, in the same way that like, in the same way that In a Violent Nature kind of reimagines the franchise by making Jason the protagonist, this one reimagines it with, you know, you invert it with the one kill, you know. And I even wanted to, I wanted to segue to Greg's thoughts, which he gave me, but that was one of the biggest things that stood out to him. Yeah. Greg gave it a 24 out of 60. That's a 6 out of 10 and a passing grade.
We'll take it.
He loved the use of sound. He had a good time overall, and it made him wish they would reboot the series in an actually cool and interesting way. We're all counting on you, A24. Having one victim is perfect for a one-hour F-13 movie. He's a survival guy, so it's totally reasonable to expect him to last as long as he did. Popped huge for Tommy Jarvis. But yeah, that was one of the things that stood out most to Greg, who we are trying to indoctrinate into this world, and he only sometimes watches.
Well, and I think that the he brings up a great point there with the character being a survivalist. So only having the skill set to not necessarily go toe-to-toe with Jason. It's not like he's in a boxing match and kicking his ass or anything. It's he's smart. He knows how to get out of positions. But it also is a really interesting way of bringing his character back into the fold after he escapes the first time. Because he does get away from Jason, and, you know, I mean, okay, so first of all, you don't really even get the introduction until, like, halfway through, so you are, like, 20 to 30 minutes of just hanging out with a survivalist, and that's not lame. Like, it actually works really well. But then after that kind of first interaction, he gets away, and he could, you know, what we say to every horror movie, it's like, just run away, get out of the situation. He's like, well, no, I know I'm not going to survive the night if I don't have my pack, like if I don't have the things to get through the evening. So it's like, do I die freezing to death, or do I risk going back to this maniac's camp to get my shit? And so that makes sense. That's a good motivation, as opposed to Tommy Jarvis just going back to like kill Jason for the umpteenth time.
And they do such a great job of something I have a lot of respect for, because it's hard to write, and it's a protagonist in peril. It is hard to keep a protagonist in peril for a long time without them making some stupid decisions that cause us to give up on them. You know, like, and this protagonist remains smart. He's equipped for the situation, even when, like, even when he's, like, exploring the Camp Crystal Lake artifacts and stuff. I don't feel like he's, like, being a dipshit and, like, you know, like, fucking around with sacred ground when he shouldn't. I just feel like he's, like, I'm like, dude, I'd be curious as fuck if I found this. I'd look around a little, you know, like.
Well, and I kind of was giving it shit earlier, but also when I was watching, I was like, how in the world does this guy not know about Jason? And then he does. He's like, this is tall tale. This is the, I mean, it, at first I wasn't really sure how the lore was going to work, and then Tommy Jarvis shows up and it kind of throws it out the window even more. Because I couldn't tell if this was just a direct follow-up to the events of the first one, because obviously all the death scenes or that he kind of visits, I think are all from the first movie. So I didn't know if it was going to be a direct correlation to that. But even if this is, you know, including six, maybe even, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan, like, that's still, like, 30 years ago. So there's plenty of time for this to become a tall tale. It's a no trespassing sign that you're going to hike on, you know? Like, it it ultimately did work. And then we get the, you know, the spooky story scene. And he's like, but, you know, that's just bullshit. And then spooky Jason stuff happens. So it would, the easier route would have been to have just a bunch of camp counselors doing the same bits. But they took a unique approach with it, and I think it really paid off.
Yeah, because then you'd be every other Friday the 13th fan film if you did that. Like, and, you know, just because Friday the 13th got away with it, like, 12 times doesn't mean you do fan films. You know, no, and I think...
And I'm not sure that they did get away with it. Like, those movies were... We love them in hindsight, but they weren't exactly, you know, beloved at their time of release.
Dude, it was like, it was just watching a cash cow get bled dry slowly, like, until there was, like, not a goddamn drop of blood left. Like, that's what it was. I don't know. I just think this movie is so on the money. Like, it just gets it just right. And I think the way I see it even the most is, like, I love this version of Jason. He's like, he's just right. He's a little between part four and part six. Like, he's more human than full zombie, and yet he's definitely not like part three Jason. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I even appreciate something I've never liked is that, like, the official Jason that people think of has the big coat, right? And we don't see that until Jason X, and then really what most people are thinking of is Freddy versus Jason, where he looks like that. This one has an unbuttoned shirt that kind of looks like a coat. I feel like that's a nice compromise on the look. And what are your thoughts on this version of Jason?
Well, first of all, I thought the costume design was really good. Like, and not just the obvious stuff. Like, yes, he's, you know, got the bald, grayish skin that's sort of zombie Jason, but, you know, not totally. But, like, just the clothing, it was also dusty and, like, heavy-looking. So, I mean, that's not just rubbing a jacket in some dirt. Like, they really paid attention to what would a jacket look like on a guy who's been wearing it for 40 years, you know? I thought, one thing that did bug me is the helmet didn't, or the mask didn't have the arrows on it, which... seemed odd because there is such an attention to detail to everything. So I didn't know if that was like maybe a not wanting to poke the bear in terms of an exact, you know, one-to-one look.
Sure.
That's the only thing I could really think of. But the mask looked great. He had creepy looking hands. I think some Jasons wear gloves. They kind of chose to go with the, you know, the hand makeup instead, which I thought worked well. And I think it, like, Jason's a non-speaking character, so you have to get all of the elements right to really make him work. One is the look. The other is the just the muscle, the power, you know, like, he has to be, his stature has to be, you know, there for us to believe that he is just this brick wall. And the other aspect is sound. And I think Greg pointed that out as well. I think the sound design, it's a little... all over the place. Like, you can tell, like, when he's walking, they're, like, obviously making it very loud, but I think it's effective for what they're trying to do with Jason.
I'd agree hardcore, and especially, like, this is a movie that is so about its soundtrack, you know, like the Kiki Mama that plays whenever Jason's present. They were very judicious with how they used that.
Well, I mean, even that intro sequence, where it's just him driving is not, I wouldn't necessarily, it wasn't like an official Harry Manfredini song. I think it was an original composition, and I thought it worked really well. I think it worked a lot like the opening to The Shining, where it like builds that kind of dread because you know where they're going. And so, like, again, it would have been easy to just steal some Manfredini music and or make your own ripoff of it, but I felt like there was a lot of originality in the score throughout this.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because again, it's a you've got one character who can talk, one who can't, and like again, the YouTube diary aspect allows him to kind of, you know, have some dialogue, but there are a lot of quiet moments, and I think that focusing on that soundtrack was so important, as opposed to just silence and then jump scares.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this: of the canonical movies, who's your favorite Jason, like actor portrayal?
The problem is I really do bleed them all together at a certain point. Like,
sure.
I mean, I definitely can identify different like costumes, but that's almost what I associate with the performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I mean, Six is my favorite, so I kind of just lean towards all of that, but. Mm-hmm. Again, it's because I love the more monstrous version of Jason. But, like, I think 4 is probably the best human Jason, maybe, you know, just because 3 is the first time we see Jason as how we view Jason with, you know, the mask and everything. But I feel like 4 is when he, like, really becomes the character that we know and love. So that's probably best human version. And again, I just gravitate towards the more monstrous and Six.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like my favorite is 4 personally as well. That's my favorite overall. And it, like, it's because he's a lanky stuntman and there's like no life behind the mask eyes, you know? And he like, he really scares me because his like, a lot of his hand movements and his arm movements are still very human. Like, it seems like they don't try to make it seem like it's like a monster. Yeah. He seems very human, but there's just something about that mask and how lifeless the face seems. The whole head seems very lifeless, and I love that. And I love random stuntmen as Jason. I go back and forth on Kane Hodder, and. Like, sometimes I'm like, he's the fucking goat, you know? And other times I'm like, I'll say, like, his Jason is very bulky and his Jason's very athletic. And I just feel like, I feel like this version took, like, a little more demur of the look from Six. And it also found, like, a little bit of Hodder's athleticism, but with that uncomfortable humanity of part 4, and I just really like the way they
well, and I think that really comes to a head in the death scene, which, you know, it's tough, but I think, you know, what's our gimmick for these is just favorite kill, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's not many kills, so
are there any kills in this? Does he get any paramedics?
He does kill 2 paramedics, but it's like kind of off screen, like they just show up bloody. But the sequence where he's crushing our lead's head is so good. So even though it's a fake out, I'm gonna count it as my favorite kill, because back to your point, I feel like it's a very human head crushing, if such a thing can exist.
Exactly.
It's not just boom, done. It's like slow and pulsing, and you can feel his head on your head. And then when that blood starts dripping out of his mouth, I mean, it was intense.
Do you know what really sold the crush from behind with me?
I think I know what you're going to say.
His hair looked beautiful.
Yes!
Right? It looked beautiful, and it looked like real human hair.
It did.
Like,
and the guy's got a gorgeous, fully leaf cabbage flow of hair, too. Yeah. So, like, if they had cut to a mannequin, which I assume they had to, but, like, it looked like him from behind. It looked like real hair. I mean, and that sold it. Like, I distinctly remember watching it, like, whoa, that hair looks good.
Yes, dude. Like, seriously, if it's a, I don't know what the effect was, but I was like, if that hair is a wig, it's like legit the best wig I've ever seen. Like, it's like the best threading of a wig on a mannequin I've ever seen, if that's a wig.
Yeah,
like,
it's crazy.
Unbelievable.
And I think that's where, again, you know, kind of to throw it back to our boy Art of the Terrifier movies, so many kills in horror movies these days are CGI. So, like, it just sucks because it's crazy that stuff that people were doing in the 80s looks better than what we have going on right now in most horror.
Yeah.
I think the Terrifier movies are a big exception, and I think that's why a lot of horror fans really like it. But this felt like, you know, exactly something what we would have had from the original.
Oh, yeah.
If not a little bit better, which is absurd to say.
I would have loved it. If, like, I would still love it. I would love it if A24's was anywhere near this good. And that's even with, like, this moment. This one has, like, it just has a couple moments where the acting's, like, a little hokey. You know, like, if anything brings it down, it's that the acting is not always amazing. It is at some points really, really good.
I will say, and it's ultimately not a knock because, you know, I'm just a piggy who loves my... just slop. Just give me all the Friday the 13th lore. I do think it's a stronger movie without Tommy Jarvis and the paramedics showing up because I do think the acting was not there. No offense, Mr. I think it's Matt Thomas or Tom Matthews or something like that. I think it took it from a really believable story to like, okay, all right, it's a Friday the 13th movie. But again, it, I appreciate that. That's not a flaw. It's a benefit. But
well, in a world of gritty reboots, I love that this one went all the way with it because that is so in the spirit of Friday the 13th. And I saw this when there was nothing else. Like there was not a series. There was nothing else. And so for it to, first of all, to go that far on something that I thought was so low budget, and it seems very conservative in its budget. I don't want to say low budget because it doesn't look bad, but like it seems conservative in its budget up until a certain point in the movie and you're like, well, there some money was spent. But man, the fucking pop of like just seeing the name Tommy Jarvis, and I just thought like, oh, it's a little nod, right? And then he takes down Jason. Like, oh my god. Like, the fact that they did it and that it was, like, that they got, like, a real actor from a canonical Tommy Jarvis role to be in their fan film. Like, to me, that is so fucking loving of the franchise. And, like, so, like, Herculean that they would pull something like that off.
But it also, I think, is probably a lot easier than we think. Like, the Friday the 13th community is essentially made up of people who were like soap actors, did a couple movies in the 80s, and then didn't really do much else. So like they go to all of these conventions, they go to these fan signings. Like, it totally makes sense that somebody from one of the 80s and 90s would want to pop back into this. So it's it's almost like either people have been too afraid to ask or like we've been dismissive of these actors who would jump back in. Because, like, I always think like, you know, we're in this era of legacy sequels and the David Gordon Green Halloween movies, and it's like, oh, we brought back all these big people who are, like, famous now. It's like, well, if Friday the 13th did that, you're not bringing back Kevin Bacon. I don't really know who else, like, you would attribute to a crazy legacy character. And I think similarly, there was that Exorcist remake also by David Gordon Green, or not remake, sequel. And it brought back the like mom from the Exorcist. And like, I don't really know who that is. Like, no offense to her, but that's not that big of a selling point. So like, I think Friday the 13th doesn't have that from like a marketing standpoint. So like, this is the perfect way to do that. I'm sure they paid him well and everything, but like, if half your Kickstarter budget goes to getting an original Tommy Jarvis, hey, that's money well spent.
Dude, like, at least for my autistic ass, like, that reveal was like probably the best part of the movie for me. The when he hits him with the line and it's just like, Oh my god, dude. I was just, again, like I said, no one ever goes all the way with it.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to do a gritty reboot. Nobody wants to figure out how to make the insanity work in a way that is not overtly comical, right? And I think that's what this did so well, is there's like so many elements of like you said, like you see some iconic kill sites, you know.
Well, and
you
I do want, yeah, sorry, go ahead and then I'll interlude.
Maggot Mom from part two, you see that, and like we get that kind of look that only part two in the 2009 gave us of like, so what else does Jason do? Like when, yeah, when he's not killing, you know, like, and this one kind of gives us like a, oh, he lives here. Well, I don't know if he lives here. He, you know? He exists here. I don't know if he lives, but, so I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that.
Oh, you're all good. Yeah. I was just going to say, I thought the sets were really good. Well, you know, I think it's all scouting, but all of the cabins, I mean, that had to have been something they found. I don't imagine it's where it was originally shot or anything, but everything looked old. Everything looked like age appropriate, like as in like had been abandoned for 40 years. All the death scene recreations are like not in your face Easter eggs. It's like, oh, I know Kevin Bacon got a arrow through the neck in a bed. That's what this death scene is, you know, but they didn't like flash back to that happening or anything like that. They very much let their audience who knows these things bask in that, and the audience who may not know, it's just a kind of a killer spot.
I mean, like, I don't think it's one of those things where like that level of fandom should be a bonus, not a requirement. And that's absolute, like, it's something that makes it a little bit cooler, you know.
And I mean, and I maybe that's the best thing this has going for it. There's not a lot of like Friday the 13th movies that I would just be like, yeah, if you haven't seen any of them, pop in here. There are certainly some, but like, you know, I'm not necessarily telling somebody to watch Jason X before they watch any other one.
It's an acquired taste.
I think you could give just a general, somewhat horror fan this to watch, and I think they would really enjoy it. I think that it's not just a love letter to Friday the 13th, which it absolutely is. It's a good, well-plotted, spooky movie.
There's actual tension. There's actual fear. Like, I think that, like, what often happens, especially in just like the lazier, like, we're going to cast a bunch of like no names and murder them and they'll all have one defining character trait type of stuff. You know, Jason's not scary in those movies. You're actually kind of rooting for him. Jason's like cool, you know, and Jason is scary in this movie. Like, he is not a good guy. He is not fun. We're not having a good time. And they present him in a way that is like intimidating and frightening. I mean, like, I wasn't like shivering. I'm an adult, you know, but like, it's like, he is an intimidating presence. This is a high tension movie. You're not going to be laughing your way through it like you would with pretty much all Friday the 13th
movies. Well, and again, I think that, you know, whenever somebody says they're going to go back to the basics with Friday the 13th, they think they need to go gritty and scary when really it's just building suspense. And I think that you don't have to have a big budget to do that.
It's like, I always love that, you know, Halloween was successful and Friday the 13th was successful. And that's why the Hollywood algorithm gave us so many holiday slashers throughout the 80s, because they were like, the audiences, they like killing on a holiday. And it's like, no, the audience likes larger than life villains. The holiday was a coincidence, actually. You know, and this is definitely Jason as a larger than life villain. Like, truly, like, the thought of him just fucking wandering around in those woods seems plausible and terrifying.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my god, that fucking lake. Oh, that lake kill. Yeah. Fucking sick.
Everything looked just so good. And again, if there were green screen scenes, like, it wasn't apparent to me. There was there was some like kind of shoddy, like, oh, this is a GoPro recording screen. Like, you know, that's oh, it's cutting out because it got hit too hard. It's like, well, GoPros were kind of meant to not do that, and it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't, like, cut out, you know, and stuff like that. But, again, I get what you're going for. It's fine. 2017, a fan film. I'm not really going to dog you too much on that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. The only other note I had is that I did, unfortunately, have to dock a point for remembering Ghostbusters with that I Ain't Afraid of No Ghost line. I do have to retroactively dock 1 point from everything that remembers Ghostbusters. There should just be Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, and then, but we should never remember them.
No one should ever remember them. People should be afraid of ghosts, actually.
Yes. Yeah, dude. Unless you're the ghost in my house is super nice. Her name's Ventity.
Well, there are exceptions to every rule.
Yeah, man. Did you have anything else to add before getting into gimmicks?
I don't think so. Again, I really do want to applaud it for the less is more aspect, which doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't feel like it had to restrain itself because of budget. It felt like the movie they wanted to make. Have you watched any of the others?
I forget how far I've made it into them. I know I watched the next one, which is Never Hike in the Snow.
Which is actually a prequel.
I don't even, it was a long time ago. I don't remember it that well.
Yeah, because Tommy Jarvis is in that one too. I watched that one last night, and then I watched the trailer for the second one. And the second one seemed to be leaning a lot more into, like, the lore, and there seemed to be a Corey Feldman kid. They didn't, like, obviously de-age Corey Feldman or anything, but they hired a kid, and he's got that kind of goofy bowl cut wig on. I'm not dismissing it because, again, there are not so greatly put together trailers all the time that aren't indicative of a movie. It did seem like maybe they got all of the applause for the Tommy Jarvis thing and maybe moved away from, I think, what made this one so good. I don't know that for sure. I'm excited to check it out. Just very pleasantly surprised. Truly, if we're comparing it to the 12 other Friday the 13th movies, it's up there. Like, which is an astounding thing to say.
Probably top three for me. Like, seriously.
This is silly, but I watched it super late last night and was just like, oh, I'm not going to make my wife sit through this. Like, sometimes she has fun with these, but, you know, not all the time. But I finished it and I was like, damn it. I kind of want to rewatch that with my wife. I think she'd have fun with it.
This was one of those things that when I first watched it, I just, you know, spread it like the gospel, man. Like, it was one of those things where I was like, I've just got to tell people about it. I got to get them to watch it with me. Like, it's the kind of thing that you, like, again, it gets you excited because it's actually cool and it's fun. And I don't know. I think even, like, maybe it being a fan film takes a lot of the pressure off. You know, like, if they requeled or made a canonical whatever, there would be all this, like, hand-wringing and pearl-clutching about the sanctity of Friday the 13th, is Blumhouse going to do it right? Oh, my God, don't make me live to see that world. And I just feel like as a fan film, maybe there's no pressure, you know? And it's even, like, I would agree with you. I think it's a stronger film if it ends with the late kill, but, like, it's more of a Friday the 13th film if it goes all the fucking way.
And ultimately, like, that's the important thing for your fan film is to feel like a Friday the 13th film. So... So gimmick wise, I really didn't prepare. I have that one kill. Quote wise, I didn't write anything down, unfortunately. What was yours?
Well, I had a runner up, which was look at the beard on that vagina, which can be Dylan's pick if he doesn't think of one.
It might have to be.
But man, I avoided saying this line the whole podcast. It's hey, maggot head, remember me, asshole? Uh-huh. That was fucking cool, man.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll take beard vagina. This would be when the Playboy that our lead character found and then brought with him got picked up by the horny paramedic, because even if you're going to have a couple cast members on there for like 5 minutes, one of them's got to be horny in a Friday the 13th movie. So they got it in there late in the game, but it was important.
Mm-hmm. And it that even seemed dreamlike, you know, like that like there was just something off about that whole ambulance, and there's plenty of ways you could interpret it. And
well, okay, so I do actually, I wrote down it was like Return of the King with all these endings, you know. I kept being like, all right, are we done here? But when they did belt him down, and then he like kind of, you know, it went to that ethereal, like he's stuck in this stretcher in the forest with Jason, like it like kind of teleported him out of there. It was, again, it's very dreamlike, but that really worked for me. It was super stylish. And that's not something we always get with Friday the 13th movies, like distinct directorial stylization. I thought, but like there was fog throughout the movie that I thought worked really well. Like there were a lot of decisions that made this a unique viewing experience, as opposed to, again, like we keep saying, a gritty reboot or just a yellow sheen because it's going to be set in the 80s with camp counselors, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's called Atmosphere in a Can, and it's not expensive, filmmakers. You start spraying it as soon as you enter Jason's lair. That was a foggy room, and they made it seem so much like it was just, like, dusty as fuck. Yeah, I 100% believed it.
It was so
like,
cool. And again, it's...
Yeah.
I really got to quit shitting on fan films, because if this is indicative, I should you know, watch more of them. But golly, it was just a lot of fun to experience. And, you know, one of the reasons we picked these was, again, it was we had just done one in, you know, September. So it was like, well, let's, you know, maybe shake it up. But we are running out of Friday the 13th movies to cover. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, I think you guys haven't done... Three and nine.
Jason Goes to Hell. Surprisingly, oh my God, still on the board.
All right, I will weasel. Oh, Greg has to be on nine.
Jason Goes to Hell is one of the only ones he's watched, because I brought it to his house one time and made him watch it.
Oh my God. So I have a similar story to that. A buddy of mine, I don't know if you remember Dan Pointer. We went to high school together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he broke his leg playing hockey. We played hockey together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went over there to, like, spend time with him because he couldn't do anything, and I brought a lot of movies to watch. And I guess I just assumed everybody liked all sorts of movies, but I played Jason Goes to Hell for him, and he was just like, what are we watching? So, to this date, that might be the only Friday the 13th movie he's ever seen. So, you know, sometimes you do just gotta dump him in to the deep
exactly.
end.
Exactly. Dude, that's about as deep of an end as you can get.
Yeah.
There's a reverence for your source material, and then there's that.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure, it's been a couple years since I've seen it, but, like, I think it has the Necronomicon from Evil Dead in it.
Yeah. The implication is that Jason is a deadite, and Pamela used that to res him. And if I remember correctly, it is the legit prop, and the guy who made it was fucking pissed because he didn't get paid because they like fucking stole it. But
sometimes things work out that way.
Yeah, dude.
But no, so not many left. But some burners left, so
I think.
I think the Friday the 13th podcast hiatus is until next June, it's right after my birthday, so I'm I'm contemplating trying to figure out how to rent like a cabin and like do something, because I think it's also Jason's birthday is June 13th.
That tracks.
I'm June 18th, so I'm like, okay, you know, a little happy birthday Jason thing, maybe we can make that happen. So
dude, that sounds dope as shit.
We'll see what we can make happen, but yeah, so until then, enjoy fan films, because they're better than you think.
Seriously, like I said, like, if the only problem with like showing this to someone first, because it really is such a good, like, if I just had to make like an actually good AI amalgamation of like all of the original Friday the 13th movies, I feel like if the AI worked, it would probably come out something like this. The only problem is if you show this to someone first and they're like, cool, what should I watch next? You're gonna be like, well,
I think that ultimately, if you're ever trying to get into the Friday the 13th movies, it is kind of a gauntlet you have to suffer through. So it's like you really got to watch them in either chronological order or so out of whack, like you don't know what's happening. Like there's got to be like a machete order in there somewhere. So you're like 1, 4, 6, 9, and then go back and fill in gaps or something.
See, for me, I feel like there's what I call the like childhood style of watching this, where it's like I rented them when I could. I caught them when they were on TV. By the time I started really remembering them, it was because they were playing on Spike TV all night when I was a rambunctious middle schooler who stayed up late. And so I remember, honestly, this is where we connected on Friday the 13th, because you started commenting on my post and linking me to those articles, those reviews that they do. It was me sitting down at like age 28 and being like, Jason Voorhees is my guy. I love Friday the 13th. I don't know what I've seen.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what I've seen, so I've just got to watch it all.
Well, and I think I've mentioned on past episodes as well, like, there is a certain sense of, like, information goes in and it escapes the moment I do not watch it anymore. And then I just get to relive it every single time. And those plot points that aren't very important, I get to be surprised about.
Hell yeah. Well, do you have a score for Never Hike Alone?
Gosh, you know, I base things on like kind of a 5-point scale. Kind of like you, I definitely put it within its genre, but I also put it within like the Friday the 13th genre, because it is, you know, its own thing.
Yeah.
But like, if I were to break this out as just like a Shudder original, like, you know, there's a movie called Deadstream that is a guy in a haunted house doing a live stream, and, you know, and it got like a lot of praise. I didn't think it was that good because it felt very hokey. This felt like the better version of that to me. So as a Friday the 13th movie, it's probably a four and a half or a five of a Friday the 13th.
Straight
like,
up, dude.
Like there's bad Friday the 13th movies I love, but this isn't one of them. This is a good Friday the 13th movie. So 5-star Friday the 13th movie, I'd probably give it like a 4-star just straight horror movie. You know, again, some of the hokier elements, it being capped in an hour also, while that feels long for a fan film, it is a short movie, so, you know, maybe it's a 3.5, but, so I just gave you like 4 different numbers to go with there.
Perfect.
How about
yourself? Well, I would have given it a 39 if not for the Ghostbusters reference, so it is a 38 from me.
Well, Womp Stomp, like, learn from this mistake.
Why the fuck would that be in a Friday the 13th fan film? They're completely unrelated.
Because it was all.
Why would
the
that
80s.
Even be there? I guess I just. We should never remember it. We should just watch it, and it should exist.
And what's worse, it might have just been an improv line, and somebody whoever wrote the script was like, "Can we please cut that?" And we're like, "No, let him have it."
He's a huge Paul Rudd guy.
Yeah. Everyone's favorite Ghostbuster, Paul Rudd.
Paul Feig is mine.
Yeah, well, good God. All right, if we're done lying to ourselves.
I watched him I've been watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Not the newer one, the OG. Paul Feig is her teacher, I believe.
Yeah.
And I just, every time I look at him, I'm like, you want me to think you're Tim from Heavyweights, but I know you made Girls Busters.
Yeah, yeah.
I also know you made A Simple Favor, which was insulting, sir.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, so we didn't actually talk about this on what we were watching, but we did interact over watching Woman of the Hour. There's the Anna Kendrick connection to A Simple Favor. Mm-hmm. I'll go on record here and say I was not a fan of the Paul Feig Ghostbusters movie. I know it's brave of me. But I also wasn't really a fan of A Simple Favor, and a lot of people really liked that movie. So
I didn't care much
for it. But Anna Kendrick, I thought, did a really good job with Woman of the Hour. So ended on a positive note there.
Yeah, dude, Woman of the Hour was a great flick. Vanessa showed it to me. She'd already seen it. Dude, we should have talked more about that.
We probably should have.
Yeah. well, you know, well, one-time movies for when past the Bechdel test.
This isn't a Woman of the Hour podcast. This is a Friday the 13th episode. So, a fan film, Friday the 13th episode.
According to our metrics, our listeners are predominantly men older than me.
Saw you shared that, by the way, and I thought that was an interesting skew. Either
who
or
are
it's
you,
unfortunate we are getting in that bracket.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to get more chicks to listen to this. I wonder if Abby's doing anything. Abby, you want to come on our show?
I'm sure leading with need more chicks to listen to the show is the winning argument there. Let's get that onto marketing materials. Let it rip.
Okay, let's start. No Anna Kendrick. some ground rules.
Yeah, you have a lot of ground rules for your Chicks Rock episodes.
Nah, dude, honestly, a really good Chicks Rock movie would be Woman of the Hour. Honestly, that'd be a great Chicks Rock movie. Anyway, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, what do you have showing up next?
Up next, we have a holiday episode with the homie Bevan Boychuk. He is returning after Casper ghosted us.
Yes.
So we are gonna run down two Ninja Turtles Christmas episodes, and we're also just going to have a segment reminiscing on Christmas toys, because we're both Christmas toy collectors.
Very
so that's
cool.
At least the plan for next week. Thanks for getting me back on format, by the way.
Well, you know, I tried. I'll get you back on format on the end, but I also will never let you do an appropriate introduction for my episodes. always come in mid-talk.
Dude.
Is one of those Christmas specials the live-action one?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, it is indeed.
My memory is upholding then. Yes.
We have a lot to look forward to in the coming days.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Well, I'm excited to listen and enjoy some turtle time this holiday season.
Hell yeah, me too. That might wrap the season. I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet. We'll see what the holidays look like, but that may be the season finale till we come back with the Grennies. We'll see. We'll see.
There you go. Can be an interesting Grennies.
It is. I think, Dylan, I gotta say, I think this year we gotta do a best guest host, Granny, and I gotta think you're a front runner, my guy.
The only thing I will say is I cannot handle that pressure, so I will just give it to Don Denham. I'll just give most praise to Don Denham, so.
Cool. Well, we'll see. The Grannies are going to rock this year. We'll figure this shit out. Maybe Greg will come back soon. Who knows? We don't want to blow any reveals.
Who knows? I mean, he beat the Elite Four, so I don't know what else he's got going on.
Well, you know, he's got to go through the original Johto. Original Kanto. Which one's red, blue? Because, you know, they go back and...
Yes, he...
Red's at the top of Mount Silver, and he's a motherfucker to battle, let me tell you.
Well, fatherhood is treating him well.
For Greg Work.
The Pokemon Master Johnson.
The Beating Red Work Johnson. And Dylan, very scary Dairy Berry, but also very merry.
Very merry, yes. The seasonal change.
I'm Denny. Let's hope the meds work, Taylor. Speaking of seasonal change. And this is Mid Movies for Wind. We already told you when, but you know what we didn't tell you? What's my cage again?
I'm a policeman. See my badge? Just like it.